Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington, D.C. insiders, AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. The AI revolution has been led by industry, and governments are trying to catch up. This week on Capitol Hill, lawmakers, tech giants, and watchdog leaders were part of a Senate hearing on AI. While most agreed there's a need for regulation, that is where the agreement ended. While tech CEOs tried to ease fears, advocates like my guest today are worried about how this new technology will affect all of us. She was right in the room, and I'm pleased to welcome Maya Wiley, President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Thank you, Maya, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tammy. I'm excited to be speaking with you.
So take us inside the room. You all arrived at 10. Did you arrive together? Did you get a ride in Mark Zuckerberg's SUV? How did you get in the door?
No, I just took a cab. And, you know, we were obviously greeted by a lot of news cameras. But let's do the setup right. You know, just for your audience who doesn't know me, I'm a Black woman. I have locks. I lead a civil rights coalition of over 240 civil rights organizations. We look like America. We cover every issue that's relevant to our communities. And we're 73 years old. We're the nation's oldest and largest. So I walk in that room carrying 240 organizations with me. But I also walk into that room with the news camera, and particularly into the halls of Congress, halls I walk for work regularly. But when you walk in with news cameras, what was really palpably clear is obviously everyone wants to get the shot, right? They want to get the walk in. They want to see, build for the audience, you know, what's happening as much as they can visualize it. But the cameras were on the tech company CEOs. You know, the attention was on the tech company CEOs from the minute you walk in the door. And I say that because I understand, right, whether it's a Mark Zuckerberg or a Bill Gates or an Eric Schmidt or a Sundar. I mean, you know, you've got these big wigs running these powerful multinational corporations worth billions and billions and billions of dollars and that have huge influence, not just inside the halls of Congress, but in our daily lives with what they do, how they do it. And the difficulty can be for others to do it too, right?
Right.
Or to understand what they are doing. And so the weight of the attention goes to the power that walks in the door. And the weight of attention inside the room goes to the power at the tables. And we, the people, are not seen as the power. We, the folks in the room, were the minority, not just in viewpoint and experience, but the minority in number, right? So there were, if you think, imagine the semicircle of a table with 24 people sitting around it facing the chairs for senators and senator staff, because it was a conversation in order to help educate senators, right?
Right.
And give various vantage points. But in number, it is the tech sector and tech CEOs that have the balance of the seat and therefore the balance of the attention and the balance of the voice in the room. Because for the rest of us, and we had Randy Weingarten from AFT, also a member organization of our coalition, Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO, also a member of our coalition, both board members of mine, Janet Merguia from Unidos, which is formerly La Raza, also a coalition member organization. And that's it. From the world that has constituency that are actually the regular folks in this country and know and understand the experience as regular folks. So you have a few other people like Meredith Steam, who is Writers Guild, that's on strike right now because of AI in part. And then you have one academic expert who's phenomenal, Deborah Raji, who actually understands the testing and accountability and safety and anti-discrimination issues involved in the technology. But that was it. And while it was wonderful to walk in and recognize that we are able to be a part of it, to be appreciative that there's a bipartisan process, which I think was incredibly important, that there was a shared sense of urgency and importance. And I would argue, you know, a lot of folks are, we're all people. So there was no impugning of ill will.
Right. Was there any mixing with the CEOs with you guys?
Well, certainly. I mean, in the sense that, you know, we were gathering before we were sitting down once we entered the room. And remember, the press, by and large, wasn't in the room yet.
Right.
They were only allowed in the room to come and take a photo. And then they had to leave because it was a closed door, not a public meeting, which is another issue because people have a lot of feelings about that, as you know, including on the Senate side. But I think that that gave us opportunity to catch up. And of course, we have been working with, talking to, partnering and protesting some of these companies. So both being very much recognizing the importance of being in dialogue and conversation, trying to be in partnership as much as possible, but also disagreeing. So I was sitting next to Mark Zuckerberg on one side. I had Microsoft and Brad Smith on the other. Both of those are corporations. We've been having conversations with what they do and how they're doing it. Same with Google. So we were certainly having side conversations as much as possible. But because of time and because there was a larger conversation to be had, a lot of them were, how do we catch up? How do we take this conversation deeper? Sharing some concerns, saying we want to talk to you further. So I think there was a lot of that happening as awareness.
So did you have a list in these conversations with the CEOs when you're, you know, meetings on the margin, I think they call it in Washington? Did you have any sense that any of them came with anything in their hand to allay your fears, which we're going to get to, about that regular people are not represented? Did any of them say, hey, Maya, you know, listen, let's go do this together. Let's go do that together. We feel this is dangerous. You feel this is dangerous. We don't want to stop innovation, but should we work together? Was there any sense like that?
Generally, the way these conversations work, and not just at the forum, but generally, is we have a set of concerns. We raise them directly to the companies. In some instances, we have access to the top. In some instances, you know, there's a government affairs or civil rights team is what you have access to. And sometimes you get to the top. So some of these conversations we've already been having, right? So in this sense, a lot of it became, for example, with Meta, we've got a lot of concerns about what's going to go on in the election cycle around mis- and disinformation. We've had a lot of concerns about how that's handled. Many of these tech firms that are making a lot of important statements about regulation and about safety and trust and the ability to protect people and their commitment to it, including protecting people from discrimination, have cut back their teams that are their way in which they do that internally. So they have, in some instances, reduced their staffing that performs that work. So we've raised big alarm bells about those, you know, as well as their policies, what their policies are about what they consider to be dangerous. So often that's us going to them and them saying, okay, we'll talk. And then the question is, you know, who are you talking to and are they willing to make and consider changes?
But they didn't come to the table with anything at this meeting for you. I mean, did they say to the senators, because you've been talking about it, others have, especially let's focus on elections for a minute. Yep. Did anyone other than you bring that up?
It's hard in a day-long meeting to remember.
Yeah, that's all right.
But I will say it certainly came up. I certainly raised it. Also, some of the senators who were asking questions who were there to listen asked explicitly. As you know, Senator Klobuchar has cared a lot about this and has been carrying legislation on finding ways to create more safety in election cycles. So it's not that it didn't come up. I think to your point, the tech sector as a sector is deeply concerned with their ability to continue to do what they consider innovation and to make sure that whatever that means, they get the maximum flexibility. That doesn't mean they're not principled. That doesn't mean they won't say, yes, we agree. Everyone agreed there should be government regulation. But the devil is always in the detail. And for instance, whether or not there is, where and how do the guardrails start when we're talking about impacts on real people? How much transparency is there? And what kind of form should it take? And from many of the tech CEOs, you know, one of the places where I was pushing back, quite frankly, was let's just consider some of the use cases. That meaning, you know, if we back, you know this, Tammy, but just to make sure for your audience, please. Now, artificial intelligence is like a title for a lot of things. And there are models upon which tools are built that are built on the scraping all this data and information. So there's what we call the model. And then there's what's built off of all the models. The big tech companies it's the models that they're owning. And then there are all these different creators, companies that are then trying to create tools and do other things utilizing what comes out of the model. The reason I'm saying that is there's a whole bunch of different users. But the big tech, and not if you're Microsoft, you know, if you're Google,
OpenAI, yes.
OpenAI, what you're doing is saying, we got the model, we'll either monetize you're using it, or like, you know, there may be some not-for-profit use. But the reason I say is because they're really talking about the end users, which is a way you could have a situation where they say, we're passing the buck to others, both on liability. That's where the licensing conversation could go, depending on what we mean by licensing. But it could become, so all this stuff that's already been built, that's been built on data that we can point to examples, the very data that's building it and the assumptions around what's in the models themselves are a problem. So you can't just start now after the fact moving forward on what others create. And I'll give you a really grounded example. You know, a company decides to create a tool using artificial intelligence to decide who needs hospital care, who's most likely to need hospital care. Now, this sounds like a really great, wonderful thing to know and to have, because then you can really think about resources and targeting resources and population that needs help. But what we know, and you don't even have to be an expert, if you are Black, if you're Latino, if you're Native American, if you're low income, if you live in a rural community, that a likelihood that you either have a job with health insurance or get access to a hospital is unlikely, is significantly lower. Our folks typically are only getting emergency room treatment, and a lot of them aren't getting the hospitalization they need. What that means is the data skews to people who have health insurance, who have resources, and who are using hospital services. So then what happens, the AI produces an outcome that says white people with more wealth need more hospital care than people who are low income and people of color. That's by definition. But that's built on the data that's been utilized, that itself is skewed.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Was there a conversation about transparency on the models?
So that's what I was pushing. But that's where, you know, that's where the debate starts to get into the devil of the detail, because where then the companies, and these are high level conversations. So you're not getting deep into what do we really be?
Right.
So it can sound really great to have an Elon Musk say, yes, we must regulate. But really, where there's vastly different conversations, even tech company to tech company, about what that means and about at what level. And I would say most of the tech, on the side of Elon Musk, I would say that the danger in the discussion and the way Elon Musk was framing it was only if it's cataclysmic, only if it's society ending, should that happen. If it's self-driving cars, that was an explicit example, then no, we shouldn't worry about that. So that, and there's a lot of range in between, right? I'm not putting everyone in the Elon Musk category, but my point was, no, It is all part of the same system of technologies built off of models. And the problem, it's not that you don't look at how to do it differently depending on what stage, but you got to look at the whole thing and you have to understand what the whole thing is built on and you have to have some transparency about that. And that is the kind of conversation where but the balance of voice matters. Because if most of the voices are tech companies that want to limit how far and how deep you go and try to carve out a lot of exception, then folks like me say, we agree with you, we need innovation. We agree with you, this can be a tool for good. But if we're not starting all the way back at the foundational points that already can get us off the road to all our good intentions, we're missing how we can innovate equity, how we can innovate opportunity, how we can innovate better health outcomes. But we're also recreating and reproducing all of the ways that society isn't fair.
Well, when you brought this up, what did the senator say? I mean, what was their role in these conversations? Did they come in and say, you know what, she's right, and what are you guys going to do?
So, you know, like all things in politics, it's time this Pammy. Depends on the senator.
Right.
I would say that the role, and I really
well in
did
this meeting though, did Pete, you know,
meeting,
did it get specific? Not specific so to the.
Yeah, I think that there was mostly high level, because part of the idea is obviously some senators are already we already have bipartisanship in terms of Senator Blumenthal and Senator Hawley working in a bipartisan way on legislation and planning to start a legislative process. And then you have this conversation in the fora that Majority Leader Schumer and Senator Rounds are creating as a bipartisan education process that's the closed door process. So very much depends on who's talking. So I would say, you know, what I call the gang of four were the co-conveners of the forum who are sitting at the table with all of us who are facilitating the discussion by asking questions and posing questions. Therefore, the most part, you're getting a read from the questions they're asking and how they're framed.
Mm-hmm.
The audience, on the other hand, which are the senators who are the recipients of the educational process that this is supposed to be, have the opportunity to ask some questions. And that's where you got vast differences. So some went directly there. I have legislation I want to propose that says this. What do you say? Like an Amy Klobuchar who goes directly to deepfakes. We're going into election cycle now. I want to legislate on deepfakes right now. What do you say to that, right? Versus some senators have broad questions like, what does this mean for workforce and job loss? To some senators, a couple make statements. One senator make a very clear statement that said, tech sector has opposed my efforts at transparency and accountability in the past. I've had to fight the tech sector to get legislation that helps people. And so I have a trust issue about whether what you really mean and what you're really going to do, because you blocked my privacy legislation. You opposed it. You lobbied against it. So, you know, there were different levels depending on who was speaking.
Elon Musk is a bright, shiny object in the public's eye. What do you think of his comments after the forum?
One of the things that was unfortunate about the direction that the news took the conversation, or one of the directions, was this civilization-ending possibility that Elon Musk threw out there, which in a sense becomes, you know, it's the big, scary, we're all going to live in the Terminator movie.
Right, right.
Fear. But the problem with that, and there are obviously others that have suggested the possibility that AI leads to general intelligence, right? Meaning literally the computers being able to decide humans aren't necessary. Doesn't necessarily mean a Terminator-like. But, you know, that kind of computer sentience, for lack of a better word, you know, becomes its own potential civilization-ending event. Or the other piece of it is the kind of national security hawkishness around the weaponization of artificial intelligence. The problem with that part of the conversation, or using it to drive a conversation about what we do about artificial intelligence, is it what it really is saying is, and he said this, you know, it's like, we shouldn't worry about self-driving cars or all these other things, basically, you people are talking about. We should only worry about cataclysm. But if you're saying you agree to regulation, if you're saying, yeah, which he did, right?
They all did, yeah.
But they all did. But if you're saying you agree to it, but really it should only pay attention to only the very worst case, most cataclysmic national security type framework, then what you're really saying is, let it discriminate, let it be unsafe, let it not be pro-social in the sense of whether we're really using these tools to innovate versus whether there's really sufficient understanding of the public, whether people are the central beneficiaries, whether we're protecting privacy, whether major companies are able to essentially scrape all our identity, utilize it, monetize it, and not necessarily create good with it, but create harm. It just changes the whole conversation from all the ways in which this is going to touch people's lives and already is. And in some ways, in some obviously ways we hope will be very helpful because we believe, like all technology, it's a tool that can benefit people for sure. It can be pro-equity if we really work together on designing it to do better for people. It can also do a lot of harm. And a lot of that harm is short of cataclysm. Is in our everyday lives, whether it's losing our jobs because we're developing automation rather than looking at technology as a way to support an economy where people can actually work better and healthier and still have good quality lives and jobs, whether it discriminates or not, and whether it really puts out an ability for a lot of people to do a lot of harm, like hate groups, like foreign governments organizing mis and disinformation, but targeting our division to do it, targeting racists to do it, targeting anti-Semites to do it, all of the things we know they can do. So I think that's the problem.
Let's talk a little bit more about elections. As you said, the tech companies have rolled back. And I would argue that Elon Musk is the most powerful person in this election because he controls X. And X is, as a media person, the forum where most of these conversations take place, with all due respect to Facebook and all the other platforms. It's sort of the center. You agree, right?
Well, I think it's one of the main centers. What I would say is, depending on what audience we're talking about. I mean, you're right that X is critically, centrally, both able to have huge impact. It's why it's a real concern that they virtually eliminated trust and safety.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They've already eliminated trust and safety before this election goes around. So,
right.
And then
YouTube is a major issue for us as well, because as we saw in the 2022 midterm cycle, you have a video, viral video from Atlanta, misinformation saying a video that shows, and we could go back to the indictments now that we're seeing out of Fulton County that's talking about this video that went viral, but with disinformation about what it showed, which was suggesting that there was tampering with ballots, but it goes viral and it was legal. Everything that was happening in that video was legal. And this is without AI, right?
Right.
But it goes viral. It just gets misinterpreted intentionally and misused. It goes viral. And then we see people incited by, in one instance, a local elected official, inciting people to show up at ballot boxes to quote unquote protect them. So people with arms, people armed with rifles show up at ballot boxes. That tells people, be afraid, be very afraid of going and dropping your ballot in a box like you're lawfully allowed to do, because there are people standing there with, and all of that affected, that didn't just stay in Georgia. That became national disinformation that actually affected how people behaved and how people were threatened and harassed. So I agree with you about X. It's not to disagree. It's just, it really, there are a couple of different major, and Facebook is as well.
Right. And that's, and the reason I went to Elon Musk and asked X, because at the end of the forum with all the interviews that he did afterward, and he's the bright, shiny object because he does the least amount of interviews, right? Hadn't been around. He really talked about the cataclysmic effects of AI and took it away from really what you're talking about. How do you pull back that conversation?
I agree with you. I think Elon Musk, and it was by being able to grab the headlines and the sound bites coming out of that saying civilization ending event, gets everyone focused on the absolutely most dystopian and cataclysmic way you can think about the technologies. But what the problem is, what it serves is to say, ignore all the other societal ills. Ignore all the other ways this is dangerous, and frankly, dangerous right now and impacting people's lives. Ignore all the ways it can be innovative if we actually regulate it right, right? If we regulate it right, it can be innovation for good. But it distracts from that. And we should remember, Elon Musk is talking about a cataclysmic event when he has 46,000 satellites up in space, which is actually a significant national security issue.
Right.
And yet, it's actually standing in the shoes as if he's somehow, I mean, I just think there's a lot of real debate to make around what role he's playing and whether or not we're moving fast towards a future we can avoid.
So did you get to talk to him?
No.
Or did Brandi Weingarten, was there any mixing with Elon Musk? I saw photos of him with Alex Karp from Palantir, but no conversations?
I had none. I was sitting on the opposite end, but I can't say no one else did. You know, it was a big room. I didn't see it. I can't say it didn't happen.
What about Sam Altman from OpenAI? We've talked about Elon Musk, other CEOs. Sounds like Bill Gates really talked about the philanthropic opportunities. But, you know, Sam Altman had spent so much time on Capitol Hill trying to explain it. He came out and said, one, this is amazing technology, and then also signed the document that this is the scariest thing in the world. Stop everything for 6 months while he's building Elon Musk.
So did Elon Musk, by the way.
I know. He signed it, but he has his own, you know, company working on it. Did you get to talk to him? Have you spoken to him? What was his positioning in the room vis-a-vis your issues?
You know, I didn't speak to him directly, although I was near him, but we did not get the opportunity. First one, let me say, I'm not sure that anybody said anything in that room that they haven't said publicly. I certainly didn't. And certainly in what I was hearing from different leaders, it wasn't different from anything you could probably search and find public statements about, right? So it's not that the room itself was Elon Musk, to your point about Elon Musk. But the same with Sam Altman. You know, his view, as both, I think, represented in the press, but is reiterated in the forum, is this will end poverty and it can be dangerous. But the way we should handle that danger is to let people use it. And as people use it, it'll get better. We'll find ways to get better. So I would say he is the, probably of all the people I heard in the room from my own interpretation of statements, he is the most bullish and optimistic. I would just argue it's a blind optimism. And I share the hope of the opportunity. And by hope, I mean the possibility, not the inevitability, but the possibility. I live in the possible. Lots of possible good here. The problem with that kind of what I call blind ops, I don't mean he's intentionally, but I just mean optimism. And I felt this acutely in the room, you know, of this room of sitting at our table. If you take out the senators themselves who are at the table, there are roughly 20 of us, right? Only, I think, 6 or 7 of us of that 20 are actually living and working the experiences of people who are supposed to benefit from the technology at the bottom end of the ladder, right? So when we hear these things, we're thinking, this statement, like this will end poverty, like a technological tool will end poverty, completely ignores that technology isn't an end in itself. And it doesn't live outside the realm of what decisions we make as a society. So it doesn't live outside the realm of whether what we mean by regulation, what's transparent to people, What kind of safety tools do we have? Whether we slow it down enough to ensure its safety. Europe, the European Union, has been the leading edge of this.
Right. Which they're all against, right? They're all fighting against Europe.
That's the point. And all of the things that they are saying are really they would be aligned with, if you just take it at their, at the high level, aligned with what the European Union actually did and has done. And yet they all opposed it. Or at least I can't say all, I didn't do the research on all, but many of them opposed it, right? And this is the rub. This is why I say it really gets down to, what do we mean? And what would it mean to be a West? Because it is a global issue. That came up a lot. We certainly agree. It's a global issue. It's not just a national issue. We have to look at it globally, but we have the opportunity to align with Europe. Even for all the hawks, why would we not align with Europe? Why would we do less? Why would we lower the bar to keeping everybody safe and keeping things fair and equitable and working to make sure this is helpful to society and not harmful? Why would we lower that bar if we have these other concerns about what China is doing? If we have these, because it gives us the opportunity to help lead in a way that helps people. But I think the problem, and I say it as a problem, it's not about intent, right? It's not about Sam Altman's very good intent or Bill Gates's very good intent or anyone else's very good intent. It's about understanding that all these policies, we just saw child poverty, right? We're having this debate about child poverty. We cut child poverty by 40% without technology. We cut child poverty because we put money in the pockets of people who are struggling to pay rent and buy food. That's how we actually reduce child poverty. We didn't even need technology for that. Having technology does not eliminate that problem of whether or not people have enough money and food. And so I'm saying that because it's not that there's not, we could align technology with a lot of other things we do to produce a result that says we want to eliminate poverty, but it has to be aligned. The technology doesn't do it on its own. And really what they're doing is disconnecting it from the realities of people's lives rather than saying, if this is our circle, because I share that vision.
Right.
How do we get there? And what do we need to do to get there?
So that's my next question. How much conversation was there about who's going to regulate, how it's going to be regulated? Was there any conversation about the department creating a department of AI? Talk about the regulation piece.
Tons of conversation about that. Tons. And of course, we need an international body, which in some respects,
Is this the tech companies you're talking about?
Yes,
is this all the companies? Right.
It's all the tech companies. And I think this is also my point is the tech companies are very eager to get to the how to regulate, which really is who and at what level and where. And I think this is the issue that comes up with having a broader public discussion is there are a lot of really very practical implications to whether you say it's a single entity, it's multiple levers of government, but focused on licensing. Now it's standards, the standard setting is a global body. All of that was an active way. Whether it's open source AI is good or bad, or it's both. And all of that was very active debates for the most part with the tech companies. And I actually do think it's very necessary for the larger public to be able to engage in those conversations and go about the how, but you can't talk about the how unless you're agreeing on the end. And I think what we were trying to do in the room who are not the tech companies is saying, we actually are not sharing the agreement on the end point. If we can coalesce about the end point, that's what should guide the structure. Because the implications of what they're all debating is about what they want the outcomes to be.
It's funny, when I heard the list was announced, I thought, wow, this is probably the first time that Liz Schuller, I know a little bit more about you. You're always talking to everyone and trying to bring consensus. But I thought of Liz Schuller and Randy Weingarten in the room with these tech CEOs. And frankly, even in the room with all of those senators, I don't know if Randy ever met Josh Hawley. I kind of doubt it, right? So do you feel that you guys were able to, get the attention of the, not just the tech CEOs, but also, I mean, they had you in the room, right? So they wanted your opinion. And even though the numbers were on the other, I don't want to say the other guy's side, but the CEO side, do you feel that you made enough inroads that as they decide on regulation, you'll have a seat at the table?
Well, we will have a seat at the table because, as Shirley Chisholm said, you don't get a seat at the table, pull up a folding chair. We're used to folding chairs if we need to pull those folding chairs out. I would say we're very grateful and appreciative of that, of both the majority leader and the other senators being very conscious of making sure there were multiple voices. It is very unclear yet how they were heard. I mean, certainly we were all clear. I think every last one of us was clear who are not in the tech companies that, look, we agree that this can be a positive for all of us, that this technology is neutral. Problem is it's the people who aren't. and the data, and then by definition, the data that isn't. So what do we do about that? And whether or not that's heard, I think it remains to be seen. But we are certainly going to continue to work both constructively and with the outcomes of a society where every last one of us, and I said it, I'll have, whether you're in a coal mining country or you're in Compton, like it's actually going to help you and not hurt you, is what we're leaning into. But we're going to keep organizing. You know, we created the Center for Civil Rights and Technology at the Leadership Conference as an effort to make sure these conversations continue to happen in a way that is accessible, that does help educate the public and Congress, and that continues to pull us up all together outside of these congressional hearings or fora, because the work we have to do is not only going to happen inside those conversations, that also has to happen outside.
What's the next conversation there on the Hill? Do you have any sense of what the next steps are?
Yeah, there are going to be more fora. We are active and there are going to be some topical, for example, innovation, national security, other issues. I think we're working very, very hard and are very grateful to the majority leader staff and the majority leader himself. We're asking for and taking our recommendations on who should be in those meetings. We're really asking for more balance, because if the purpose of these forums is to educate senators for lawmaking purposes, the balance matters. Because if the balance is tech companies, then it's already skewing the conversation and the sense of what we need to be talking about and what the potential issues and impacts are. So we're really pushing hard to also make them more balanced, so there are more voices, including more academics, not just advocates.
We haven't talked about the one academic. Deborah Raji was the lone academic there. Can you talk about what she discussed and was she heard?
Deborah Raji was, in my view, an absolutely pivotal voice. And the reason she was an absolute pivotal voice was essentially because she was the independent, neutral researcher who knew and understood exactly what the tech companies were talking about, because she has done some of the evaluation work and research on how their AI is working and whether or not it discriminates or is safe to be released to the public. And so she was able to, from a researched, evidence-based, fact-based position as an academic and as a researcher who's done the work, to actually counter some of the things the tech companies said in the room. And she, I think one of the most powerful things I've heard her say, and could back it up with work and research. One of the most powerful things I think she said, from my perspective, that I hope senators really heard was, I know and appreciate why, from a product standpoint, tech companies who are creating these things have very, very, very high levels of optimism and belief in what they do and how they work. The problem is that often doesn't pan out and it often becomes untrue. And very often we are seeing these tools being released to the public when they are not ready, have not been sufficiently evaluated and tested, and should not be released and do harm or have the potential to do harm. So having someone who could say that and do that, actually talk about the nitty gritty nuts and bolts of the whys, but also that how in terms of how it should be done was really critical. And for us, I think as an advocacy community, it underscored a central point I think every single one of us was making from our own coaches, which is if people who are impacted are not helping to feed back into how this is going to really hit the ground and land in people's lives, you're already missing it, because that's part of the reason why we see the problems we see. You know, Tammy, I used that example on the hospital, the algorithms that kind of found that white people, who generally speaking, white people, not all white people, but mostly white people with resources and health insurance are the ones who were found to be in need of hospitalization. I didn't need a research study to tell me that that was distorted by the fact that most of our folks don't actually. I was an access to healthcare lawyer. I was fighting to make sure people could get hospitalization care and weren't getting patients dumped in emergency rooms. We know, so the data is that, but we understand that. We could have told you that. We could have told you once we saw what assumptions you were making about the data and the tools. We could have told you what you were missing. So unless we have that kind of reality check in the process, because a lot of these tech firms aren't bringing that kind of wisdom and knowledge and know-how, and that's part of the third party, you know, engagement and transparency and accountability, it is going to create harm even when you have the best intentions. And research and points were underscoring that, but from a very technical, practical, and researched way.
So all the organizations that you represent, there's a lot of fear about this technology. So you've talked about how you're, you know, fighting the good fight to make sure this becomes more fair. But how do you do the other piece of it, the public facing part, which is don't be afraid of this technology. You know, how do you take care of that trust factor? Let's put them aside, but how do you, when you go and talk to people and all of these different communities, because you've got a wide berth there, you've got a lot of people to talk to, how do you have them not be afraid? I hear you being optimistic, but how do you have them not be afraid to be open-minded?
Well, a big part of it is, my optimism isn't about inevitability, it's about possibility. And to say, here's what's possible, because it's actually a tool. The question is, how's the tool designed? Do we get to design it? Do we get to have influence on it? The possibility for that is here. Possibility, not inevitability. But it's how we should engage. We should engage in the realm of the possible in terms of the world we're trying to create. The technology is already here. It's the question isn't, we're not trying to stop technology. And frankly, for most of our communities, the goal isn't to stop technological advancement. We're pro-advancement. We're pro-progress. It's that there's so much distrust because we've seen time and time again that we've been harmed by it rather than helped. But that's only because we miss the opportunity we have right now. And the opportunity in the fact that tech companies are saying what they're saying. Like, we should not have discrimination. We acknowledge we need regulation. We agree there has to be trust and accountability. We actually know that we have to do better. We know we have an obligation. And some of them are saying some very important positive things. I mean, I'll call out IBM and Microsoft, said some very positive things and acknowledged that we had to work on these things. So there is opportunity. So we have to lean into it in a way that where we're deepening our own ability to say how. Because we can't just say as a community, we want it not to discriminate. We have to start having the agency say, we're going to tell you how. And that's part of why we created the Center for Civil Rights and Technology, so that we had space to come together with academics, with experts, with our allies in the tech world. And we have them. We have, you know, data scientists and others who actually really deeply understand this, to help us collectively figure out the how, so we do it differently, because we know we can, and then we fight on that.
One final question. Were you able to convince Senator Schumer and Republicans on the Hill to make the next meeting public?
Well, I will say this. I think what we have been saying is we have been pushing for getting more voices in. Because there's a legislative process, there is going to be more public. There really is. It's by definition going to happen. It's already happening with Senator Blumenthal and Senator Hawley. So we're actively excited, engaged in supporting that kind of process as well. But we're also going to push and have the dialogue ourselves. So I think what we're kind of saying is it is going to be a public conversation. It has to be a public conversation. We should make sure it's balanced in all ways and in all places it's happening. But I think as you're seeing and going to see, we're all going to be talking about it. We all are talking about it. We just have to talk about it more together.
Thank you, Maya Wiley.
Thank you, Tammy.
Maya is now living in Washington. She's president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. If I lived in New York, I would have voted for you. Sorry, Eric Adams. But we're glad to have you in D.C. and the work you're doing on AI. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. And New York has never lost.
Thanks, Maya. Thank you so much for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI policy. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media.